Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Franchise Essentials Show. My name is Paul Segretto, and joining me is my co-host, the Franchise King himself, Joel LaBava. How are you today, Joel?
Paul, how the heck are you?
Not bad at all, but I asked you first.
Oh, I'm doing just wonderful in cloudy, 82-degree Cleveland, Ohio. How's it down there in Houston?
You know, it's amazing. We never get any rain, but every time we're getting ready to do the show, the clouds darken up, and right now we have some rumbling of thunder, and power keeps going in and out, so hopefully we'll get through the show. Just so the listeners know, we are pre-recording today's show. Yes, we are. We're pre-recording the show because we're a day earlier. It's Wednesday, September 9th at 090909 for the date, as I will be presenting to the Women's Franchise Network on Thursday, 9/10, as most people will be listening to this. And so we couldn't be here and couldn't determine a remote access to do the show live from the speaking engagement. So in the future, I would love to be able to do that live, as the message that we send in our live appearances certainly will benefit all. You have anything?
For the right price, I can fly down there and do it for you.
For the right price?
Yeah, come down there.
Oh, for the right price for you. Oh, okay.
Yeah, you'd have to pay me.
No habla inglés. Well, as I said, I'll be presenting at the Women's Franchise Network. And then starting next week, I have my webinar series with Franchise Business Review and Ginny Dietrich. That's a webinar series. And, you know, it's good to see things heating up for sure. I see a great deal of activity online and social media. I've seen ads for, you know, different webinars and special events throughout the franchise community. And I know you've been busy with articles for American Express, amongst other things. What else do you have going on?
Oh, man. Actually, I had a nice opportunity to write an article, and I think it will be out this week, on a blog called The App Gap. And that's APPGAP, into it runs it. And it's going to be about home businesses and some of the home business scams that we all hear about. And I kind of wrote the post to make sure that people realize there's a difference between envelope stuffing work at home opportunities, quote, and home-based franchises that are actually legitimate. So that should be coming out either this week or next week. And I'm sure I'll be linking to it over on Twitter.com.
You mean stuffing envelopes is not legitimate?
When I stuff envelopes to pay bills, it's legitimate. But,
I am glad then that I chose to send my money over to help the prince in Nigeria who can't get his funds.
I cannot believe that I still get those in my spam filter, man. And we have money deposited in your name. Okay. I mean, who actually clicks these and opens them?
It's hard to believe, but that obviously there must have people doing that, but otherwise they wouldn't keep doing it. And the way the economy is, I could see people taking a shot at stuff like that if you're in a desperate enough situation.
Why? You and I do stupid stuff all the time, and we keep going back for more.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right. I even started a new blog yesterday just because I wanted a place to vent, and it's called Imperfection, and I've really been amazed at how many people have been on the site and how many emails that I've received saying they like the site, they like the Twitter-style feel to it. I don't know. Maybe it's something I'll run with. I started it just to be able to vent a little bit on the different imperfect things that we experience every day.
If you start one more blog, we're going to have to get you some professional help.
Yes, definitely professional help with three letters after their name. Or how many letters are in? How many letters does a doctor of psychiatry have?
Why are you asking me?
I figured you had been frequenting one, haven't you?
I'm fine. I am fine. F-I-N-A.
Well, I beg to differ. Well, Joel, today...
Whatever.
Let's talk about franchise candidates, how they're being attracted to franchising and to specific brands, and then let's explore some of the various segments of franchising that I think you and I both agree have reached levels of saturation.
You know, I agree.
Yeah. Today's franchise candidate, you know, as we said before, are certainly more sophisticated, more technologically advanced, and certainly better educated than ever before. And I think it's even more so the case, or at least not from the educational standpoint, but maybe more cautious than ever before because of today's economic situation that we're experiencing. Are you seeing franchise candidates that have come along that look like they're a little bit more cautious, maybe a little bit more interested in doing due diligence that maybe they should have been doing all along, but are now taking the necessary steps to do so?
Well, not only are they coming to me with kind of a little more cautious mindset, but I am encouraging them to slow things down a little bit, and do it, and really, really do it right, and make sure that it feels right. So yeah, I think you know, our country right now is at an uncomfortable kind of area financially, and people aren't generally sure which way it's going to go, so they're cautious to begin with.
Well, do you find that when you're asking them to slow it down and telling them to slow it down, that are they reluctant to do so, or do they do so willingly?
50-50. Some of them, the emotion is starting to kind of creep in, which is okay. You have to have some adrenaline going because this is an exciting time. You know, hey, I don't have to work for a bunch of idiots anymore. I'm going to get in my own business, I hope.
That's it. You know, I know they're spending more time researching opportunities, and of course they are doing so at a slower pace. In order to be diligent in the process, I know they're spending more time online. They're pouring through pages after page of information. I know since we went from a website to a blog site, an interactive blog site, and we have a section for franchise candidates, we've seen them spend more time on the site, hit more links on the site, you know, investigate more resources on the site. So certainly they're spending more time online, and I'm sure if we were able to get into their computers, at least I'm not computer savvy enough to do that, I'm sure they're moving back and forth from new information to bookmarked information and back and forth. And, you know, I think they're probably spending more time talking with other franchise candidates.
I hope they are.
Yeah, because I know in social media circles, on the various social networking platforms, especially something like LinkedIn, in an entrepreneurial group, I've seen more activity back and forth, asking questions as to what other people are doing in the process. So I think they're gaining some invaluable insight in these groups, and I know for me. I'm getting a lot of activity from franchise candidates or potential franchise candidates. Well, let's call them interested parties initially.
Right.
That
right.
are looking at franchising. And I think they need to understand things a little bit better. And I think your suggestion and recommendation to slow things down certainly is a good suggestion.
Yeah, slow down is always a good suggestion when it comes to a major decision, like you know, writing a check for $50,000 or $60,000, and then going to your friendly local banker for the other $200.
Yeah, well, I don't know if the banker is going to be so friendly anymore, and certainly a lot of them aren't going to be local anymore. You know, I think more importantly now, franchise candidates need to be certain that the franchise is as perfect for them as possible. I mean, can if we're cautious and they're taking time, I mean, can we get to the point of just dealing with indecisiveness and not dealing with and being a decisive nature in order to go ahead and proceed with it? I mean, do you think we'll see some people just being indecisive and never get to the point of making a decision? And maybe that's good, because maybe then they really shouldn't have been in business for themselves to begin with.
Yeah, they you know what? I believe that this might be a little heavy, but I believe that things work out pretty much like they're supposed to. So the folks that start kind of backpedaling, as we call it, and start to get nervous and end up not pulling the trigger and getting the franchise agreement signed and sending a check in and stuff, you know, sometimes it's for a good enough reason. And maybe they were a couple of years too early. You know, maybe they need to be bounced around in corporate America a little more, or maybe they just need to stash a little more money, you know. But whatever the case, it usually does work out like it's supposed to. You agree?
I agree. You know, one thing that I'm seeing in talking with some franchise candidates is that, unlike the past when, let's say, the investment was a total investment of $400,000 and they had, you know, $50,000 to put down and put towards it, and they were going to the bank for $350,000, they really weren't as concerned about, well, if I get if I get $350,000, maybe I should take a little bit more. I'll try to get $400,000. And it seemed like that back end, the amount that was on the note, wasn't as important as franchise candidates are today, or making it today. And maybe the same thing, maybe it was that same philosophy that people had over buying homes. I'll, you know, who cares? As long as I can afford the note now, I'll worry about the adjustable rate mortgage in the future. And it seems
like
a franchise candidate is definitely looking at things a little bit more astutely. They're looking at things more cautiously. And even if they can whittle down on what the total investment would be, which I know hadn't been the case in the past, it was always, well, how much does it cost me to get into it, was often the their primary question. Now it's the total investment, which I think is good. I think it's real good. Are you seeing some of that same type of thing that I'm seeing?
A little bit. I mean, the buyers are definitely getting a little more sophisticated. I'm not seeing a huge shift, but definitely a little more sophisticated. And I think the social media space will help prosper more people digging in, you know, deeper to the total investment amount and the return and all that other fun stuff that really is easy to find out about if you know what to ask.
Well, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, many individuals today, you know, that are looking at franchise opportunities, you know, are looking at things differently. I mean, they have to. You know, many are transitioning corporate executives staring at the back end of an illustrious career. And I think this is something that might come to light now, is how much do these transitioning executives really know about operating a business? Sure, the franchisor is going to provide them training. It's going to prove to them that, you know, the system works. It's going to entrench in their mind the system and follow the computer software and follow our proprietary system. But is that really enough to teach new franchisees how to operate a business in general? And if it's not, I mean, do we as an industry need to do more to educate them to the fundamentals of operating a business? What do you think?
I think that all adults are responsible for their own actions. And for me, if I'm interested in something, I make sure that I go out and find all the information possible. I don't need someone to encourage me to do so. It's just, you know, my personality. Maybe some prospective franchise candidates do need a little push in order to dig deeper and find out if they really have the right professional and business skills to operate their own business as opposed to running someone else's business.
No, you're probably right. I know there's a lot of question and answers, and I know you routinely look at the franchise blogging world. And I know you didn't you find recently on a franchise blog some sort of question and answer that was posted?
I don't know. Which one are you talking about? Because I was
franchise
I was over
Frank.
alltop.com. Oh, Franchise Frank.
Yeah.
I found that on over at the alltop.com franchising site. And Franchise Frank is actually from Franchise Direct, but he posted on Franchise Chat. You figure that out. Anyway, you wrote an article on assessing franchise opportunities. I wonder if the guy's name is really Frank. But he wrote an article on that, and you and I are actually discussing a couple things. And it's a pretty lengthy article, but I think it's a good one for prospective franchisees to bookmark on their PCs. Do they have bookmarks on Apple?
I'm not sure. I'm not an Apple user myself.
They must. I'm sure that there's a way to do that. But anyway, some of the questions that he posed that maybe franchise candidates should be asking the franchise directors and the franchisees, here's one of them. Is your lawyer satisfied with the franchise agreement? You know, that's kind of an interesting one. You know, obviously you want to use a franchise attorney to look over the agreements before you sign. Do you feel that your franchise attorney is satisfied with the franchise agreement? Or did you maybe say that, well, I'm not worried about that or that. I'm okay with it. You know? What do you think?
Well, at that point, you know, how many franchisors I guess let's re-clarify the franchise attorney being satisfied. I think as it needs to be clarified is he dissatisfied at the way it's written from a legal terminology standpoint, or is he dissatisfied and wants the client to go back and negotiate, you know, a reduction in the franchise fee, a reduction in the royalties, and a lot of the things that are not actually negotiated on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's the fine line in a franchise candidate talking to their franchise attorney about it.
Well, I've had a couple experiences where candidates of mine have gone to franchise attorneys that I didn't know or know of, and they really weren't franchise attorneys. They were business attorneys who happened to look over some agreements, you know, once every couple of years. And what ended up happening in this two cases specifically is they try to go back and negotiate things like royalties and franchise fee reduction and stuff, which isn't going to happen.
Right.
The franchisor actually ended up getting kind of upset and, you know, almost blew it, almost said, you know what, we don't know if we want you because this is a headache already. What are you going to be like 2 years from now?
Well, you know, one of the things that I find, too, especially if they're not going to a franchise attorney that is used to looking at franchise documents on a very regular basis, you know, most attorneys want to go ahead and find something. They don't like coming back to their client and saying,
well, sure.
Yeah, everything looks good. So sometimes, I mean, we know how a lot of these documents are written, and they're standard across the board. And some of it's boilerplate, of course, but, you know, I would say for the most part it's directed towards the individual franchise concept. There's a lot of business aspects of it. How much can they really say, this doesn't work, that doesn't work? Now, of course, I believe where a franchise candidate should use a franchise attorney is to let them know. In other words, let the attorney, letting the client know, letting the prospective franchisee know what the ramifications are if the business doesn't work out, what their obligations are both during the franchise agreement, to term of the franchise agreement, and after the term of the franchise agreement, understanding completely the consequences of failing as a franchisee and as a business owner, And I know various states have different non-competes and what have you. So I think it's really important that franchise candidates fully understand, and the best person to ask in that situation would be their franchise attorney.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, it's important to go to an attorney very, very familiar with franchising. And a good franchise attorney will ask, you know, the client, are you sure you understand how this works? Do you know that they can build their sandwich shop a quarter mile away? Oh, I didn't see that. Well, yeah, that's in there. And did you know that it's going to cost you $7,300 in 10 years to re-sign, you know, for another 10-year agreement? So make sure that the franchise attorney, I mean, that's what the, for me, I think that's what the franchise attorney is there for. Some of the stuff you mentioned, just to point out things that might have been missed. You know, the FDD is a couple hundred pages long. There's a lot of detail in there. For a guy like me, I would miss a lot. For a guy like you, you wouldn't miss a lot. But that's what makes the world go around. So, yeah, I think this Frank dude has kind of put some thought-provoking stuff out there. Do you have that franchise chat article in front of you?
Yeah, I have the article in front of me. You know, and you mentioned that, you know, it's a great thing for franchise candidates or interested parties to bookmark. But, you know, I want to look at this from a franchisor's perspective. And I believe that franchisors should be asking themselves these questions, you know, from a franchisee's perspective, so that they can answer the questions, or they could prepare their documents, or they can make sure that their franchise system is in line with what's being looked for out there in regards to these questions. I mean, you know, the first question he talks about is the franchise promotional material professionally prepared and presented, or does it consist of home-produced pictures and photocopied bits and pieces of mixed information?
Kind of like our websites.
Yeah, but I also guess that there's some franchise companies out there that, you know, have some half-assed marketing material, and certainly that's not indicative of a proven franchise system, I wouldn't think.
I'll call you and I'll raise you on that one, because here's what I tell franchise candidates, because so many of them are cruising, you know, every franchise directory imaginable to try to find that perfect franchise fit, and you know, maybe it's a logo or a color combination of red and black, you know, that subliminally, you know, is attracting them. And I always tell people, you know, the best franchise in the world would have the worst looking website that's all choppy and terrible, but their system is really solid. And on the other hand, the worst franchise in the world can have an amazing $200,000 website and an amazing sales process that's automated and fantastic, and you can choke after 6 months. So, you know, the look and the feel of the marketing materials obviously is important. But, you know, are the franchisees making money? Are they happy? You know, maybe the marketing materials need a little tweak. You know, get to the meat.
Right. And you know, I know his fifth dot, as you like to refer to.
Listen, you. So I called it a dot this morning instead of a, what is that word?
A bullet point.
Bullet point, yes. Well, yeah, you live in Texas. It's easy for you to remember anything that has to do with guns.
Well, also, when I think a dot... I think of that great candy I get in the movie theater for $7 a box. Actually, what I usually do is go to Target, buy it for a dollar, and sneak it into the movie theater.
Where do you put it?
In my wife's purse.
Good answer.
You know a great way for a woman to embarrass a man? Here, honey, hold my purse.
Oh, man, I hate when that happens. Well, my wife and I never go anywhere together anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, and the best way never to have to hold her purse again is by start rummaging through it, looking for something, and make believe you're looking for, you know, an Altoid or a piece of gum.
I can't even find my wife's cell phone in her purse when she asked me to retrieve it.
I know, it is amazing. His fifth point, I think, talks exactly what you said. You know, find out, you know, is it a happy family? He says, from your conversations with the other franchisees, do you get the feeling that this is a happy family, that there is a strong spirit of cooperation and mutual, I think that's really a key, mutual support.
That's the sixth dot, actually.
It's the sixth dot. Can I not count? Yes, you're right.
Kidding.
No,
kidding.
It's the fifth dot.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a hard time. Happy family. We order that. We order happy family up at the corner. It's a Chinese dish, actually. I'm serious. It is.
I know it is.
Shrimp, scallops. I think it's like duck breast, chicken, and you know, some wood ears or something. It's important stuff, man. I'm not talking about food. No, I'm kidding. No, you know what? You should get a feeling that it's a happy family, because if you go on to Discovery Day, where you go visit in person, or even if you sit in on a phone call that the CEO is giving or something, man, if you're hearing dysfunction, you want out. You know, the culture is such an important part of this. Is it a culture fit for you? I think that is oft overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, another question he has, is there a sense of desperation in the franchisor's attempts to woo you into the network?
What dot number is that?
I'm not sure what number it is. It's one of the latter bullet points, because they're not numbered. They're all just bullet points. But, looking at it from a franchisor's perspective, you know, if I'm a franchisor that's trying to survive, or maybe not. Let's go beyond that. Let's say they're not trying to survive. But if franchise candidates are being pushed into franchise agreements, and it's coming across as desperate, I would say that's a red flag on the franchisor side, and certainly if franchise candidates feel that way, it's a red flag on their standpoint also. I like what he says here, you know, don't get pushed into signing the franchise agreement because there's standing room only. There's only, you know, one or two spots left. Act now. I mean, people need to understand a little bit more what the different rules are and the waiting periods and everything else. And again, that's another thing they should learn from their attorney.
That's right. That's right. I got only maybe early on in my career have I worked with a couple candidates who said they really, really felt the heat. That's why I'm so careful about which franchisors I choose to work with. When I was with a franchise network, I they let us choose a couple local ones if we wanted to work with, but 95% of the franchisors they chose for our group, and I didn't necessarily like that. So I get to choose the ones that I work with now, and I know you do too, and it's much better that way. Because, you know, you and I have been doing this long enough where we can tell if there's some dysfunction. We can tell if there's some desperation just by first or second phone call with them as we try to make an arrangement to present their opportunity. Agreed?
Yes, I definitely agree. And he has another bullet point that talks about you. It says, finally,
oh, no.
There's something to be learned from acute business. Astute. I'm sorry.
Listen, you.
You cute.
Yeah.
Learn from astute business people. They are astute because they are experienced, and the most valuable experience is usually gained when things go wrong. Bear in mind that the relationship between franchisor and franchisee is formalized through a partner agreement. Now, I don't like that. I'm going on record as saying I don't like when people start referring to this as a partnership.
Why?
Why? Because it's not a partnership. It's a relationship. And again, you said earlier, you know, people, grown adults, have to take responsibility for their own actions.
That's
right. Same thing is true there. I mean, you got to understand, you know, we can go through all the cliches, be in business by yourself, be in business for yourself and not by yourself. But it's not a partnership, okay? It is not a partnership. A partnership is a little bit different when they each equally have, you know, the same skin in the game. Okay? That's not the situation here. I believe it's a relationship. It should be an interdependent relationship where they are dependent upon each other. But as we discussed last week, I don't think we can go down the road of having franchise candidates believe that, okay, we're a partner. Now, I've done what I had to do by making this investment. Now, I'm going to sit back because I know the franchisor is going to just flock people through my front door, and I'm going to be successful.
And I know
through your silence you disagree with me.
Well, I agree. Just because we pay you royalties, that means that you need to send me customers. You know, that's baloney. That's not going to happen. I guess that in some of my presentations, I probably referred to the relationship as a partnership. I think it's obviously not a legal partnership, but it's a partnership of sorts, and it's what I call a selfish partnership. The franchisor needs to make sure that you guys find a nice location that's going to make a lot of money so the franchisor can make a lot of royalties. And you are looking for the right opportunity so you can get where you want to go. And in that regard, it is a partnership. But since you're paying royalties and they're not, that is definitely where the partnership stops.
Very well put.
Not bad, huh, for a Cleveland guy?
Not bad for a Cleveland guy.
Well, I got trained on how not to do stuff. So, you know,
that would be a good webinar. Franchisors, how not to do stuff.
Yeah, and that'd be a pretty easy one to run, believe me.
Well, you know, okay. So franchise candidates come wallowing through the door. They are online. They look at the Q&A. They're looking at some social media. They understand about small business. They understand about entrepreneurship, and they start looking at franchise opportunities. Boy, I know I'm going to throw you. I'm lobbing you this softball, Joel. You can read the writing on the side of it, even made in Japan on the bottom of it, and you can count the stitches as this ball is being lobbed into you. What are the risks of using a franchise broker?
Well, interestingly enough, if you Google things like, should I become a franchise consultant, should I become a broker, interestingly enough, articles appear from the Franchise King blog. And I've written about this and talked about it. The risk of working with certain franchise brokers and consultants. Now, let me give you full disclosure. I am one. The risk is you're working with someone that just started, and most of the franchise brokers out there right now just started. Okay, don't kid yourself. I always tell people that if you're going to work with a franchise consultant or broker, make sure they have at least, I'm going to make a lot of friends with this one, Paul. Thanks for that lob of the softball. Make sure they have at least 2 straight years of experience in franchise brokering, franchise consulting, and that they have, I know this sounds kind of weird, and that they have actually placed several people in franchises. Because otherwise, baby, they are learning while they're earning, and they are earning money on your dime and your time. And you know what? The training can be wonderful. It took me a year and a half before I knew what the heck I was doing. And I had my late father training me along with the group that I was with. It's true. Yeah.
Let me interrupt you a second. You did say, you know, they should have, you know, a year and a half, 2 years experience placing people. Now, will you clarify that by saying that if they were in a franchise development position with a company for a couple of years, that falls into that period that they
but as a lot of the big broker groups have seen, because they're smaller now, some great franchise development people from some great franchise companies lasted about 6 months as franchise brokers, because it's a different business. Because a franchise broker, a real one, doesn't sell. They're matchmakers. A franchise sales rep, a franchise development person, sells franchises. And it's two totally different things.
Well, you know,
talking
about selling franchises, I mean, what's your thought process or your thought on awarding franchises and selling franchises?
I like to work with franchisors that have the courage to turn people down, even if they're my people. That's how I feel about it. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. What about you?
I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. I'm dealing with one, the Kolache Factory, right now here in Houston, that is just
what was that called? The Kolache Papers? What?
Yeah, the Kolache Papers. The Kolache Factory. I'm telling you, those people have the utmost integrity. Just remarkable people, and I could see that they turned down maybe even more than they approve.
Good.
And, it's really good. They really do not move the process along too fast. They're very diligent. They're very careful. They're very cautious. They're, of course, concerned about their brand name as well as the franchisee's success. You know, in this franchise chat, that's what it was, right? Franchise chat, the blog.
Yeah, franchise.
I also
franchise
noticed.
Dash, yeah.
Yeah, I also noticed that Michael Syed had a article in there as well earlier, examining the risks, and benefits of using franchise brokers. Did you happen to see that article? It's a while back.
Oh, I saw that article, and as a matter of fact, Michael and I became friends after that article. I called him on a few things. He agreed and disagreed with a few things. And we've ended up having, somewhat of a casual relationship. And we've worked on a couple things, a couple small things together. He's a really smart guy, really smart guy.
I have never worked with him side by side or one on one. I've heard great deal of praise about him.
He's tough, man. He's tough.
Yeah, he is. Well, you know, it's funny because when I was researching some of this and I came across the article, I thought some of it might be written by you because some of it had your thoughts all over it and some of it didn't. So I could see why you disagreed on some things and agreed on some things. You know, I think one of the biggest things that I have a problem with, as you mentioned, franchise brokers and franchise consultants, and I guess we could be considered each.
Yeah, sure. We
are. But in few other industries, does the term consultant connotate, you know, brokerage or sales?
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that is misleading to a lot of people, and it also, I know, hurts us. If I'm talking to somebody and they say, well, you know, what do you do? And I say I'm a franchise consultant, they immediately think that my primary focus is working for franchisees and franchise candidates and trying to place them. And obviously that's not the case because we do a lot of consulting on the marketing side and I do a lot of consulting, obviously, on the management and operations side as well. And I think that's part of where things kind of started to get off track a little bit, too, in the way they were referred to. Now, of course, we also, the industry has changed a lot. You know, at one point, people were proud to say, I'm a franchise salesperson, to the point that now I am a franchise development agent, or I'm a franchise development, you know, director. Nobody wants to call themselves franchise sales. I mean, what's wrong with calling yourself a franchise salesperson?
Well, I'm not one.
Well, I understand. I'm not directing it to you. I'm directing it to the industry. Why have we gotten away from, as an industry, of the corporate offices having franchise salespeople?
I don't know. I think that franchise development director has a nicer ring to it. I would stick with that if I was the CEO of a franchise company. I think it's okay. You know what? People weren't born yesterday. They know that my opinion, of course, they know that they're going to be sold something. There's money changing hands. It doesn't bother me. I don't know. Maybe the Midwest thing. It doesn't bother me.
I mean, I like the head of the department being, you know, he could be in charge of franchise development, but I think the people on the front line, they're franchise salespeople, and they need to look at their profession as one with integrity and treat it accordingly. I don't think there's anything wrong with referring to yourself as a salesperson. Risks
well,
of using a, what was that?
I don't either. I agree. I just think it does sound better. And that's all.
Risks of using a broker. As I said, excellent article by Michael, and people should look at it, as well as some of the articles that you have written on the Franchise King blog at www.thefranchisekingblog.com.
Hey, there's a search box right up top. Just search for franchise consultants. You'll see all the articles you want to see, and
there
some you don't.
You know, one of the things, too, he brings up is the conflicts of interest.
Yep.
He talks about that the reason that the disclosure and where necessary broker registration is required to protect both the franchisor and franchisee. He said, regulatory burden aside, the rules regarding disclosure of brokers and whether these lead generation firms are brokers and subject to disclosure and where required registrations are no longer subjects of significant debate. I mean, are we doing a bunch of double talking? Is it still too complicated, even though, you know, the UFSC evolved into the FDD and it should have been simpler? Are things still a little bit too complicated in your eyes?
No, I don't think they're that complicated. And you know what? With the way that the internet is now and social media and some really smart people out there that are insisting on transparency, including you and I, it all comes out. I don't know. I don't know. I think it's okay.
He goes on and says, add to the fact that many brokers are not disclosed in the franchisor's UFOC, might not be registered where required, may have a conflict of interest, and may ultimately pressure the prospect to make a rapid decision, and the risk to prospective franchisees is clear. Is that something that you agreed with or disagreed with?
Well, actually, franchise brokers don't have to be disclosed anymore in the FDDs, so it's okay.
Right, and I noticed he did refer to the UFLC, so I'm assuming this was before.
Yeah, and plus, if you're talking about Frank, if you read some of his things, he's definitely in Great Britain.
Well, I could tell just by not using Z's and using S's. And
yeah, yeah, I figured so maybe it has. Did we call? The document in Great Britain, do they call the UFOC? I bet they still do.
You know, I'm not really sure, but I would imagine they do.
Yeah, interesting.
I would imagine they do.
Anything else we can talk about besides Franchise Frank, who's done a very nice job? But
he's done a wonderful job on that.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the saturation that we feel is going on. I'll lob you another one. How about pizza franchises?
I think we need more, Paul. And I think more of your cousins from Italy should move here and open
hey,
some.
Hey, I resemble that.
Yeah, well, you do. Your last name's Segretto. full disclosure, my wife is Italian, and her grandparents are from northern Italy. So Paul and I are okay with that because he certainly knows where I come from most of the time. But, yeah, I think we need some more pizza places, especially franchises. What do you think?
I think it's just gotten to the point of being absurd. And, you know, you also look at, you know, these tax places. You know, what I see is happening is that you have the founder from one that started, you know, Hewitt. And now is as his non-compete has ended, he started.
Yes.
Living, you know, and then you have the people from, you know, Pizza Hut went over to Papa John's. Now there's someplace else.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
yeah.
it is unbelievable. And maybe when people buy these companies, talking about the franchisors and the franchise brand, maybe they need a little bit longer on the non-compete. Because
you think?
They just want to regurgitate that. Next thing you know, DeLuca will be selling Subway and then waiting 2 years and opening up a different type of sandwich franchise, which is another segment that is becoming overpopulated. I mean, how many damn different ways can you make a sandwich?
It's unbelievable. I mean, I really, really try to have a straight face when some franchisors call me just to see if I want to, maybe help them with finding some candidates. But you know what? I don't know. I just can't get excited about submarine sandwiches. Nothing excites me anymore.
Here's the thing that gets me. Not only is the market saturated and you hear, this one makes a cold sandwich, this one makes a grilled sandwich, this one does it this way. But then what happens, then they all start doing it the same way. I mean, to me, I was very disenchanted when Subway decided to start asking you, do you want your sandwich grilled? Because that's what Quiznos does. And that to me was the difference. If I want the damn thing grilled, I'll go to Quiznos. If I want the sandwich cold, I'll go to Subway. But now they're asking. And I used to like the simplicity. I liked, the thing I liked about Subway, and I was a long-time favorite fan of Subway back when their only franchise advertising was a little square on the napkin that said, for franchise information, call. And I liked the simplicity of it. I liked pointing, I want that. Give me the spicy Italian, put lettuce, tomatoes on it, a little salt and pepper, vinegar and oil, I'm done. Now it's, well, what kind of bread do you want? I don't know.
Right.
Well, we got this. We got urban cheese. We got, sun-dried tomato bread. I mean, they got 15 different breads, And now they have 10 more different things. And now I'm asked, do I want it heated? Do I want it grilled? I know we could rattle off. There's the Subways. There's the Jimmy John's. There's the Lenny's. There's Jersey Mike's. There's Firehouse Subs and umpteen other ones that run side by side with all the pizza ones. I mean, the pizzas, we have the big boys. We have the Papa John's. We have the Pizza Hut. We have Domino's. Little Caesars is making a resurgence again. And then there's Goodfellas, and there's a whole bunch of small ones. There's Howie's. There's Marco's Pizza. I mean, God, there's a lot of them. I mean, how many can we have?
It's nutty.
What other segment is overpopulated? Well, we know burgers are overpopulated.
Burgers are, but, well, this one actually has to do with food. How about these 27-hour fitness clubs?
27-hour. It's really a neat concept.
It is.
App Fitness came up with. Pulling up to a place, you have your code, you go in, you work out by yourself.
Right.
Off hours, you're the only person in the place.
Right.
So it's like having your own gym. But you're right. I mean, how many, keep popping up?
There are a ton of them. There's one that is actually, thank goodness, they seem to have a different approach. And they just signed a multi-unit agreement for New York and New Jersey. It's called COKO, K-O-K-O, Fit Club. And they have found a way to use technology to help people not only get fit, but lose weight at the same time. It's called smart training. And not only does the smart training technology help the franchisees operate their club, but there's more technology involved that helps their clients, to find out what they need to do to lose weight and get in shape. So it's a very, very tech-savvy company, and it looks a little different. Did you have a chance to look over the article at franchise.com?
I looked briefly at it, and I like that segment. I like the fact that they're doing some things that are specific as opposed to just having equipment there. So if you would, I guess that's a little bit of interaction. I don't know. I just think there are just too many of them, and I don't really pay a lot of attention to it at this point. I probably
should. Hey, can I ask you a personal question?
Shoot.
And I'll be happy to answer the same question. Do you belong to one, or does your wife?
No, I don't.
I don't either.
No, I don't.
I probably should, but I don't.
I would, but I don't think I would in that environment. I think I would be looking for a little bit more. I have belonged to the YMCA before, and I have belonged to 24-Hour Fitness before, and I enjoy that atmosphere better than what I've seen pulling up to some places and looking in, and I just see a bunch of sterile equipment and nobody in there. And I guess some people like to work out alone, but I think at times it doesn't appear safe. I just like a little bit more interaction with people, even if it's just nodding the head or saying hello.
Okay. Speaking about crowded segments, this is still a fairly, well, I guess it's not as young anymore. I guess the segment's about six years old, maybe 7 years old, you know, senior care franchising. There's, of course, there's medical and there's non-medical. I've placed people in both. Is there a market? Well, as I always tell people in my seminars, the numbers certainly don't lie with the amount of people that are retiring that are baby boomer and beyond age. Here's what I am hearing from franchisees that are in the non-medical and medical senior care franchise systems, that it is a lot harder than people think to make inroads with the service providers to get leads that turn into having paid patients. There's a lot of competition from non-franchise offerings and from a lot of the major medical systems in each community. Are you hearing that?
Yes, without a doubt. I'm hearing that quite a bit, that it's not as easy as they thought, and there is a tremendous amount of competition. And that type of competition, especially on the non-franchise side, seems to have more in the way of resources for billing and the contacts they have on a larger scale. And it's kind of, you know, not much different than the small automotive repair shop as opposed to the car dealer, where the car dealer was getting all the warranty work and they were getting
right.
a lot of the paid warranty work and stuff. And, yeah, there was a market to pick up the crumbs and stuff, but are the crumbs substantial enough to support a saturated market?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But there is a market out there, so that's a positive.
Right.
So I would encourage prospective franchisees that have sales and marketing prowess to investigate the senior care market. But remember, it is really a sales and marketing business. Senior care services, it's just, you know, those are just what you happen to provide.
Right. I think one of the keys in that is going to be the people diversifying a little bit and providing a couple of different revenue streams for the franchisee, and I think that's going to be the key to that segment. You know, another segment that seems to be at times getting very saturated is one that's talked about quite a bit by our buddy Sean Kelly, and that segment would be unhappy franchisees.
It happens.
He has a couple of interesting articles on his site. Do you have any insight into what's going on with Mr. Sugars and Action Coach?
I heard Mr. Sugars give one of his sweet presentations at a gathering when I was with a certain group. I don't know. I wasn't too impressed. I'm not really impressed with too many of the coaching franchises. And I'll tell you why. I have a family member who was one of many people that were sold a bill of goods to become a coach and to go into small businesses and help, you know, coach things along and help improve businesses. You know, and he, as hundreds of others, were sold a bill of goods, but they weren't really sold on the fact that you got to go out and find your paying clients. And a lot of the early franchisees in all of the coaching franchise concepts, a lot of the early ones had no sales and marketing backgrounds. and they went out of business. And that's wrong.
Right. I agree, and I think that almost takes us full circle back to the franchise brokerage and consulting aspect that we were talking
yep.
about. You know, how many of them don't have experience? I mean, I know
in the industry.
If I was starting a business and I was looking for a business coach, I certainly wouldn't be looking for somebody with no experience.
No way. No, would you go to a financial consultant that just got out of college? I mean, I wouldn't, you know?
Know.
You know, I have a net worth I want to protect. And, you know, I want to go with someone that, you know, knows what's going on, has actually done it.
So what other segments are out there that are being saturated? I do believe that the cleaning industry on the commercial side, the commercial cleaning industry,
yeah.
has gotten saturated. I think there are too many people that have flopped over from one company to the next to the next. And are spinning out. I can't even keep track of it because
no, there's a lot of new ones.
Yeah, and they advertise, you know, more than anybody that I've seen
yeah.
of late in the classified sections of the Sunday paper.
Oh yeah,
for the lower income franchise candidate. But God, I mean, I picked up the Dallas paper not too long ago, and it was 9 different companies offering the same low, you know, $2,000 down
right.
and. You know, we give you accounts and what have you. And as you know, I've spent some time in that industry. And I, quite frankly, I just think it's oversaturated. I think there's too many people right now probably working in those franchises that aren't even getting minimum wage when it's all said and done because some of these accounts are sold at a ridiculously low price. And I just don't see it. And it's oversaturated. They're absolutely fighting with each other time and time again. And in today's economy the way it is, small businesses that are paying for those cleaning services, if someone comes in and says, hey, I'll do it for $20 less, they'll go ahead and jump at it in a heartbeat to save $10 here and $20 there.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Tough market. Tough market.
Yep.
You know, automotive franchises, I think, are starting to hurt a little bit. A great deal of time in the automotive service industry on the franchise side. And, you know, it used to be I'd drive down the road, and I'll talk about Houston in particular, and if I saw an automotive shop that was for sale or for lease and was empty, it wasn't empty for long. It would be within a matter of days, and there would be a coming soon sign, and some new franchise automotive franchise would be popping up in there, or, of course, additional location for a Midas or an Amco or something like that. Nowadays, I am seeing a lot of these automotive shops remaining empty and subsequently being used for other than automotive. I think that's a drastic change of what we've seen, you know, 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, you're right, man. You're right. That automotive one is starting to get real crowded, and cars are lasting longer. That's changing the market, too.
Cars are lasting longer, and now with all these cash for clunkers going on, a lot of the cars needing repairs have been taken off the road, and people are in new cars, and it may have helped spur some franchise sales, but I think in the long run, it's going to hurt some of the automotive repair franchises that were dependent upon those cars for the next year or two for business. And with as many cars as was taken off the road in the cash for clunkers, that to me is like that industry right in the butt. Right in the butt. Well, you know, it's amazing how we've blown through an hour, Joel. We really have, and we're closing in on the end of our segment. As always, I appreciate being on the show with you, and I appreciate you taking the time being on the show with me, and I think we can do a lot of good for the franchise community in general. I'd like to remind everybody of Joel's website, the Franchise King Blog, at www.thefranchisekingblog.com, and, of course, my own blog at http:// FMDPro.com. That's the Franchise Essentials blog, where you can also access some of the shows, the archive shows of Franchise Essentials. Joel, it's time to say goodbye.
Okay, man. Great being with you once again. And right. We'll do this again next week.
Sounds good. Until then, everybody be safe. I'm out.
See you.